CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. CityTalk 105.9.
Hello and welcome to CityTalk's business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm the chairman of the Independent Private Sector Lobby Group and Business Networking Club Downtown Liverpool in business. And every Sunday we look at some of the week's big business stories and talk to some key personalities, decision makers and entrepreneurs who work in and influence Liverpool and the wider Northwest region. This week, I'm asking, does Liverpool have an entrepreneurial culture, or does the city simply have a future as a cultural and tourism destination? The City Council says it's business friendly, the Global Entrepreneurship Congress is coming to town next year, and yet we still have fewer business startups and higher unemployment rates than many other parts of the UK. Can the challenges that we face with a big public sector cuts agenda be overcome, or will Liverpool struggle to maintain the momentum that has seen the city centre, at least, transformed during the past decade? Also, interest rates have been held at 0.5%. How long can this be sustained? And Tesco Law, what's that all about? To discuss this and more, I'm sure, I'm joined in the studio by Mike Taylor from Liverpool Vision, Simon Gibson of Liverpool law firm Kerwins, and Liverpool City Councillor Gary Miller, a former Liberal Democrat councillor, now of the Labour Party. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, Frank.
Gary, I'll come to you first. Who did you vote for on Thursday?
I voted for Sharon Sullivan as a City Central Ward councillor.
Labour, I presume?
Yes.
Yeah, we're not going to go in too much detail about your reasons for defection, because I've heard you speak on a number of occasions about it. But just in terms of the business community out there, because you've been a long-standing activist as an entrepreneur, a business person in your own right, you've been around networking events, downtown included, yes, for many years now. What will your main objective be in terms of your input into Liverpool's Labour Council?
This city is 7,000 businesses short of the national average. We should have, based on the population level, 21,000 businesses, and we've got about 14,500 of them. We need more. We need a lot more. So I'll do whatever I can working with the Labour group and with Joe Anderson in terms of lobbying, networking, and increasing, hopefully, the business community. But doing that with Mike Taylor, who's here with us today, and Liverpool Vision, with the Chamber of Commerce, with the Federation of Small Business, with the three Soroli projects in the city, and with every councillor, whether they are Labour or Liberal Democrat or Green or Steve Radford's Liberal Party, because I think it's not about politics. It's about making life better for the 436,000 residents that live in the city and the ones that come to work in the city too, because it's not all about what Liverpool can do with business. It's what we can attract in terms of investment. It's what we can create in terms of an entrepreneurial spirit. Let's start with the schools and work through to our older generation, and let's hopefully create more jobs. Well, in fact, not hopefully, definitely create more jobs. But it is about attracting investment, and that's attracting investment from outside the city into the city. But it's also about people spending more money in creating businesses from within the city, and whether that be North Liverpool, South Liverpool, West Liverpool, or over the water into the Wirral, or wherever it might come from.
Mike, that's an interesting statistic that Gary's just come up with there. We're 7,000 businesses short. And obviously Liverpool Vision have been tasked with trying to secure more business investments into the city. And I know we've been involved in a number of initiatives like the Shanghai Expo, like the Embassy in London, some very high profile things. But on a day-to-day basis, Vision must be working really trying to secure the next deal. Is Liverpool still an attractive proposition? Is it still a place that has a good tale to tell? Or, as I said in my opening remarks there, are we being tagged perhaps a little bit too much simply as a place where people can come and visit, tourist destination? And albeit that that's a valuable sector, it's not really where a growing city needs to be. There's other sectors that need to be really enjoying momentum, enjoying investment, if Liverpool is to grow and go to where Gary describes Liverpool needs to be.
Yeah, I think some great points in the question, really. Does Liverpool have a story to tell? Absolutely, certainly it has a story to tell. And it's a story that definitely extends beyond its cultural assets, if you like. And I think this is one of the things that we discovered. You know, you mentioned the World Expo. We took a long time in the preparation for the Expo, understanding what it was Liverpool wanted to say about itself on a world stage. And yes, we kind of blatantly use the world renown of the Beatles and football as one of those kind of brand essences of what people think about when they think about Liverpool. And that was why, using those two attractors, we were the most successful city by far at the World Expo. 770,000 people arrived at our pavilion to understand what Liverpool wanted to say about itself. And whilst they very quickly got through, if you like, that veneer that they wanted to know about, Beatles and football, they started to find out the uniqueness of the city as an investment destination. And to me, it is about, we have great strengths in all the key sectors that I think you need if you are going to be a player in the global economy these days. So we have great strength in our financial professional services sector. We have great strength in our knowledge assets. We have great strength in terms of the transformational opportunities of the city, whether it's low carbon, again, the knowledge economy, the visitor economy, the superport. We've got great strengths in terms of our sporting assets, great strengths in terms of our relatively unique cultural assets. We've got great strengths in science and innovation, the strength of our universities. I think what Liverpool has failed to do in the telling of its story is work out what the brand essence of Liverpool is that captures and provides the glue that allows us to explain to people. And actually, frankly, Frank, we do need to find ways of overturning these heinous misconceptions that people have about Liverpool. And I think we've got to be much smarter about explaining the strength of our key business assets, our business sectors, the uniqueness of Liverpool compared certainly to other northern cities and probably most UK cities, in the fact that our commercial heritage has left us with this extraordinary rich culture, heritage, history, art, theatre. But it's not the USP of Liverpool. I think it is the value proposition, the kind of the journey we've been on since the major decline in the city that's left us with 7,000 businesses short of where we should be. The fact that we're back on an upward curve, we've now created some genuine world-class assets in this city, whether it's the Arena and Convention Centre, Liverpool One, the Commercial District, the Cruise Liner, you know, and a range of developments to come. That is a value proposition that I think is genuinely unique, not only for the UK, but probably is why Liverpool is capable of making a statement on a world stage about being an attractive and value-driven investment proposition.
It's interesting the point you make there, Mike, about almost having too many good things to say. Yeah. Because if you're not focused, then it can become a confused message. Yeah. And that's why I think it's always easy for people to default back to the Beatles and football. Yeah. So when you think about positive things about the city, then they're the two things you go to. When really, over the past decade in particular, we're an awful lot more than that. And I just wonder whether we've been smart enough in our own marketing to actually get that message across.
Well, I think the answer is we absolutely haven't, partly because I think Liverpool has been appalling, frankly, in the way that it's marketed itself. When I arrived in the city 7 years ago, it was kind of a big flashing light going off in my head, you know, who is responsible for marketing the extraordinary assets of this city? Now, okay, I guess when I first arrived, we were very, very busy in creating the brand essence, if you like, of 08. And you could forgive the city for not focusing on the wider marketing and brand development, because we did want to establish Liverpool as the European capital of culture in 08. I think since then, whilst we've done some work on continuing with that sense of dynamic creativity, which is probably the essence of Liverpool, we haven't done enough. And I think the whole point behind the Liverpool plan which is how we do collectivise the range of transformational programmes, events and activities, but perhaps for the first time set them in a much clearer articulation of the brand essence of Liverpool. And you're right, we can't focus on any one of them, but if you know, those things you mentioned, you know, the Beatles and football, I think they are a product of the DNA of the city, which I think goes back to the work that was done in 08, as you know, everything that Liverpool is about now is has been founded on the extraordinary dynamic creativity of the city. You know, the buildings we have, the commercial foundation of the city was all about the city being entrepreneurial. It was about it being innovative. It was about being cutting edge. And I think we've got to re-establish that as the brand essence of the city. And that's part of the work that we're now embarking on with a range of private sector partners for the development of the Liverpool plan. We massively want to increase the resource that we put into the marketing of the city. And I think a key point here is, you know, your opening comment about public and private partnership. I don't think Liverpool currently sings with one voice in terms of how it markets itself. And there's a real opportunity here to get the private and public sector all on exactly the same page of what it is we want to say about Liverpool. What is this unique and extraordinary brand essence that does make Liverpool, you know, a unique proposition? And the more we all collectively shout that as repetitively and broken record technique as we want, the stronger I think we will be, and we will establish that true essence of Liverpool. And I think once you do that, you actually start to reactivate that entrepreneurial spirit, which I think is right in the heart of the DNA of the people of Liverpool.
Simon, if I can come to you as somebody who's one of the head honchos of one of the fastest growing professional services companies in the city of Kerwins, how do you, from a private sector perspective and particularly from the professional services perspective, see the marketing of the city? Do you perhaps, like me, think that sometimes we over-egg the pudding as far as the cultural assets are concerned, and we don't shout loudly enough about the great legal services, financial services, the things that Mike was talking about? Or you know, on the other hand, do you think actually the balance is about right?
Well, it was fascinating to hear what Gary and Mike said, because to me, the point that's being raised here is all about what is the vision for Liverpool. And it's the same that we go through when we're thinking about the vision for our business. Now, if the vision for Liverpool is that we increase the amount of investment, we increase the number of jobs, we increase the number of businesses, it seems to me that I'm with Mike, that there's work to be done, because I'm not clear where the cultural facets alone fit into that vision. If the vision was, for example, that we wanted to ramp up the tourism and leisure industries, I totally see where those brand values would fit in. So to me, it's about what is the vision and what facets of the brand are consistent with that vision. The other thing for me, it was so interesting to hear what Mike said about this idea of the public and the private sector singing with the same voice, because I have to be honest, as a business which has been in Liverpool for quite some years, but also does a lot of business out of Liverpool, as a Liverpoolian, if someone put the question to me, what's Liverpool all about? What is it? What's its major strengths? And I thought to myself, right, well, look, this is your chance here to fly the flag. You've got to be consistent. I'm not quite sure what that consistency would be. So if there is a project, a strategy to getting the private sector onto the right hymn sheet, I think that is a fantastic strategy, because the majority of businesses who are in Merseyside, and particularly in Liverpool, are proud to do business here, and we'd love to help. And I guess the way I feel is that at the moment we're not quite at the table. So my view would be, everything that's being talked about is so positive. Let's get it consistent. Let's get everyone on the same page, and let's decide what our vision is for the city.
And Gary, as somebody who's been advocating closer public-private sector partnerships for many, many years now, the agenda that Joe Anderson has set out over the last 12 months has certainly been about trying to genuinely engage with the business community and the private sector. My biggest criticism over the last 7 years or so has been that though there have been opportunities for businesses to get involved, very often those opportunities have firstly been limited and secondly have almost been what I would describe as tick box exercises. So, you know, we have involved the private sector because we sent a questionnaire around to 20,000 people and, you know, it's not our fault if only five of them responded. There does seem to be, within the city now, a genuine desire to have a conversation with businesses. And a conversation is about accepting messages, sometimes accepting criticism as well, and then moving from a place where we were very much dominated as a city by public expenditure and public subsidy to a city that does have a growing private sector and hopefully can hit that target of an additional 7,000 businesses. Now, in terms of your role in the City Council, I think it's fantastic that I particularly care what party's in charge, that you've got a role now in the controlling party because you do have that background and understanding of what it can feel like to be a business that sat on the sidelines at times.
Do you know, it's interesting. You mentioned marketing, and marketing's all about communication. And if I was to criticise anything in the past, is sometimes the lack of communication, and even when it's bad news. I mean, you should always be honest and realistic in your communication. I think Liverpool, because it plays a role within the North West and within the city region, there was maybe three or four organisations selling Liverpool on a worldwide and a national basis. There was a North West Development Agency and playing its role. There was Visit England, which makes it all very touristy in its attraction to cultural events, etc. The Mersey Partnership, Liverpool Vision. Mike Taylor here is from Liverpool Vision. And each of those bodies played a role in communicating a different message. And sometimes that message would be confusing in terms of what kind of message we're trying to get out. I'm glad to see that in the last 12 months, the development of the Liverpool plan, working with Mike Taylor, in terms of let's sell the largest commercial and residential centre in the city region, which is Liverpool, which will attract people from outside of Liverpool to invest and visit Liverpool. There is, I think, has been, is a problem with communicating the four key messages. The city region, nearly 2 years ago, in fact it was September 2008, I think, but it may be nine, I just can't quite remember, where the city region, the local authorities, all agreed with the Mersey Partnership on the four sectors that we would concentrate on to 2020 and potentially 2030. Mike has mentioned Superport, has mentioned the visitor economy and culture, has mentioned the low carbon economy and the knowledge economy. But then when you go out to the private and public sector, they don't know that. So they don't, for example, at the universities, automatically create and run courses in those four areas. They continue doing what they've done for the last 10, 20 years. Now, of course, you could argue that though that communication of that message maybe was there, but the universities have listened, I've got to say have listened, but not been in a financial position to deliver and change what was already being done, because it's expensive to change. You know, you've got an IT course, you buy all the IT equipment 5 years ago, and you hope that people still want to use it in 5 years later. Actually, IT moves on incredibly quickly, so they can't necessarily change the courses to suit the vision of the city. But going back to what you said about conversation, it is about getting the message out. It's about having that conversation with individuals and with organisations. The one thing that I've always wanted to do as an entrepreneur. I'm called an entrepreneur. That doesn't mean to say that I am a successful businessman. I've had some successes, but actually being entrepreneurial is about wanting to make a difference. Being a politician is about wanting to make a difference. In my case, I recognized probably about 10 years ago that actually using my entrepreneurial skills, you can make a difference from the bottom up. And I think what's happened in the last 12 months is the new administration has actually realized more about the bottom-up approach to business development. It's about engaging with the communities. It's engaging with the private sector to say, you can make this happen. I'll help inspire you to make it happen. It's not always about putting money into something. It's about, if there's a dream, let's all work together to make that dream work. And sometimes those dreams can work without money. And if you actually say to people, do you know what? Have you ever asked for the order? Most businesses, and it's surprising, will say, well, I don't like. But actually, you need to like, because if you like, you make more money, you employ more staff, there's more people buying houses, there's more people going to restaurants, going to cultural attractions, and investing in other stuff. So actually, using communication about saying, do you know what? If you've got a dream, live that dream. If you've got a dream, let's work together to make it happen. Let's inspire and motivate each other. And sometimes it's about cash, and sometimes it's not about cash. But if we all sang from that same hymn sheet and had, as you said at the beginning of this question, have the conversation, then things can actually happen. And that's going to be one of my roles going forward. It's a role that I had previously in the Liberal Democrats, and it's a role that I will continue to have whether I'm in politics or not. We can all inspire, but I just wish more people would realise they have the skills to inspire. So maybe we can just switch a little button, a little switch, and hopefully more people will start singing from that same hymn sheet and start having that conversation.
I want to pick up on this comment that you make about bottom-up approach and ask Mike your feelings on this, really, because again, I think one of the criticisms that you will get from the wider business community is that, you know, we're great at talking to Peel, we're great at talking to Jaguar, we're great at having a dialogue with the two football clubs, but really, if we're going to see growth and job creation, it's not going to come from the bigger companies, because they're all about rationalisation at the moment and increasing productivity. It's going to come from an SME sector. It's going to come from people who are encouraged to set up their own enterprise, to actually get that inspiration, as you say, Gary, to start their own business. So for me, it's about doing what Liverpool has done well over the past 5-6 years to an extent, but actually widening the net to be more inclusive of that SME body of businesses that are out there that very often, I feel, tend to be overlooked and ignored.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You mentioned earlier the Global Entrepreneurship Congress, which is coming to Liverpool in 2012, and we pursued that very, very hard to try and bring it into Liverpool. And if you think, you know, the Global Entrepreneurship Congress has been to Kansas, it's been to Dubai, it's been to Shanghai. Now it arrives in another world-class city in 2012 in Liverpool. And we felt that was very, very important because of exactly what you've been saying. You know, the Kauffman Institute, who are responsible for the Global Entrepreneurship Congress, research that they've done shows that in any developed country, the only net job growth that has occurred has been from businesses with less than 5 people in. So, you know, it's important to have a relationship with your big companies, but most big companies are looking at ways of becoming more efficient and shedding jobs, and its productivity. It is absolutely the SME community that we do need to focus on and enable them and encourage them to grow. And that was part of why we were at the World Expo and why we were very gratified that a number of SMEs came along with us to understand how they are going to have to learn how to compete in the global economy or, you know, go into decline. But the Global Entrepreneurship Congress is particularly important because all those opportunities that Gary's quite rightly listed, you know, the knowledge economy, low carbon visitor, superport, and let's not forget with Wirral Waters and Liverpool Waters, we're sat on the UK's two largest regeneration schemes, £11 billion of potential investment. How are we ever going to get those 7,000 businesses that we need just to catch up with the UK average? Our belief in Vision is it's only entrepreneurship that is going to fill Liverpool Waters. It's only entrepreneurship which is going to create SMEs who are capable of exploiting these transformational opportunities that the city and the city region has. So our focus with the Global Entrepreneurship Congress is, you know, the actual Congress is about bringing 200 of the world's best practitioners in how do you stimulate enterprise, how do you create that vital ecosystem of entrepreneurship, which Gary alluded to. And, you know, one of the great things I like when I hear anybody from the Kauffman Foundation speak is, you know, the number one thing they say that you don't do with an entrepreneur is asking for his business plan. Entrepreneurs do not do business plan. They dream, they have visions, they put their dreams into reality. And it's our job, and frankly, the job of, you know, the financial professional services, the public sector, to enable people to live their dreams. And this is particularly important for Liverpool when you think that, I think, again, a Kauffman statistic, 75% of all entrepreneurs, they don't start their business with a view to making money. They start it because they've identified a social need and they feel very strongly and passionately they want to address that social need. So, you know, whether it's Facebook, you know, those guys didn't set out to be multi-billionaires. They wanted to know how best to keep in touch with the mates on the campus. And, you know, that was very important to them socially. And I think, you know, we do forget that once an entrepreneur has turned his company into a huge conglomerate, it's when they tend to forget about the purpose of the company. So we've got to foster that sense of entrepreneurial spirit within Liverpool again. We've got to work with the SME community. We've got to encourage them to grow and to expand and to take on apprentices, because that is the only way we're ever going to grow as a city and fill these extraordinary and unique transformational opportunities Liverpool Waters, Wirral Waters, that the city region is sat on.
And Simon, I know that you've got offices over at Brunswick Dock as well as in the city centre now over at Kirwan. So we were talking earlier before the programme about perhaps creating a bit of a business community down at the dock there, because again, you know, if the city centre, we can say, has developed and grown, for me, the boundaries of the city centre need to extend, and Brunswick Dock should be part and parcel of that. Do businesses down there, do you think they feel a little bit out on a limb?
Possibly. I mean, I totally buy into to what Mike and Garrett are saying about the need to empower innovation and entrepreneurial spirit. I think a big issue here is to create more business hubs. Because you're dead right, Frank. The city centre has been completely reformed in that perhaps the last 5 or 6 years. I don't think we can lose sight. We're talking very, very positively about this challenge, and that's absolutely the right thing to do. I don't think what we can lose sight of is that we're in a situation where it is complex, where there's a number of competing factors. I mean, I absolutely believe that in a poor economy, an improving economy, we all hope, that's the best time for innovators and entrepreneurs, not when things are booming, but in this really opportunistic time. But we can't lose sight of the fact that we are in an economy where lending isn't great, where the government are continuing to clobber businesses with more red tape. And to me, to develop more business hubs, to get that community feel, that entrepreneurial feel, is absolutely key to overcoming some of the barriers that exist. And Brunswick is a good example, because we've got quite a large space down opposite Brunswick Station. And down there you have an increasing business community, which has got the potential to grow hugely. And I think if we can focus on growing more hubs of entrepreneurship, if I can put it that way, I think the challenges that we're talking about here are that much easier to overcome.
Okay. Well, we're just about to take a break. Afterwards, we'll be talking about the interest rate freeze at 0.5%, continuing our discussion about how Liverpool can become a genuine enterprise hub, and also looking at the issue of Tesco Law and what that's all about. Stay with me and we'll be back in a mo.
This is Downtown Liverpool in Business on City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to the show. I'm joined in the studio this week by Mike Taylor from Liverpool Vision, Simon Gibson of Liverpool law firm Kerwins, and Liverpool City Councillor and indeed Liverpool entrepreneur Gary Miller. We were talking before the break, Gary, about how we can begin to engage perhaps a bit more effectively, particularly with the SME community. Simon mentioned this idea of creating hubs, which I know you're sort of interested to comment on.
Yeah, do you know what's interesting? I currently mentor about five or six entrepreneurs, young and older. And actually, from what Simon from Kerwins just said about hubs, I agree there should be hubs where like-minded entrepreneurs, growing businesses, pre-starts, can be based, can get advice, can get mentoring. But actually, I think we could all start by creating our own personal hubs in the same way that I've created a little personal hub where I meet those five or six individuals in a local coffee shop or whatever, and we just chat for an hour. Hopefully they buy the coffee or the tea, but we meet because I'm tight and I'm from Scotland originally, but love living here. But actually meet in a coffee bar or in anywhere, basically in a park, and just talk about the day, the week, the year, their business plan. As Mike Taylor said before, entrepreneurs, their business plans are in their minds, not always in paper. But it's actually quite successful when you mentor somebody. Because people have come back to me that I'm mentoring and say, because of you, I got that contract. And I say, no, it wasn't because of me. What it is, I've helped you be more focused, be more inspired. And actually, remember what I said before about asking for that order. And actually, that's what they've started doing. So I think what I'd like to see is Kerwins actually adopt a business. Adopt a business and they can become a virtual hub and mentor. But I'd actually send a call to action out to every business in the city. Actually help others be in business. Help others create business. Partner with others who've got complementary skills and actually barter with each other in terms of go back to what we used to do in the old days. And I'm talking about the days that Mike can remember, in the 1800s, where they used to actually barter a lot. But it would really work, because that would actually help people understand they've got a shoulder to cry on and somebody to actually ask a question of and be challenged by. And I think that's what we need to do more of. It doesn't cost any money. It might cost you half an hour and a cup of tea, but it's worth doing. So my call to action is every business in this city, if you're really interested in this business, this city, be more business-like, more business-friendly, work together. And if they don't know how to do it, I'm quite happy to give my email address out and contact me and let's start creating partnerships through Vision, through Kerwins, through Downtown itself. We can all do this together. So my call to action is create those virtual hubs. I'll leave it for Mike to talk about how we actually create with landlords and developers and construction companies, how to create the physical hubs, because they do exist already. The Brunswick Dock has been mentioned already. One of my earlier businesses was actually operating out of a hub in the Brunswick Docks. Unfortunately, that hub disappeared because the landlord moved elsewhere. So there was a hub in the Brunswick Dock. There's still a little bit of a hub there. There's a Glacier building. There's Atlantic Way. There's a lot going on down in the Harrington Dock area. There are hubs. They may not be spoken too much about by the landlords, but work that Vision does is engages with these hubs and tries to promote them. But they can only do so much with the cash that they've got available. It comes back to marketing. We could do masses of things with marketing if we had the right money. If you probably look at, say, Visit England. Visit England spends £11 million a year marketing England, right? Visit Scotland spends £85 million a year promoting Scotland. Visit Scotland is doing tremendously well, attracting people to the Highlands, to Glasgow, to Edinburgh, etc. Except me, because actually I prefer living and going to a Liverpool. Edinburgh's lovely, which is where I'm from. Glasgow's lovely, but this is my hometown now. But 85 million compared to 11. Look at the difference in terms of the impact from a business point of view. Now, we haven't got that money in this city. And that's why we have to work with partners and should be working with partners. It makes a lot of sense. And we can do a lot of it without spending cash.
You just mentioned two words there that I want to ask Mike about in terms of bartering and partnership. What are we bartering away with our city region partners? And is it a genuine partnership? Or is Liverpool still, again, what I perceive, it's personal opinion, paying too much attention to what folk in that good place of St. Helens might be thinking, or indeed Southport, or any of the other places that may be part of this great place that some stupid administrator back in the 70s described as Merseyside. Liverpool City Region, for me, has to be centred and focused around Liverpool, has to be seen as the attack brand. If we get Liverpool right, for me, the ripple effect is the whole of the city region benefits. It's something that's been accepted down the other end of the M62 for many years now, and we can see the success that those guys have enjoyed. Have we got genuine buy-in for that proposition now, Mike?
That's an extraordinarily juicy piece of bait you've just dangled in front of me there, Frank, that I'm not sure I'm going to fully digest. I think I might just chew it around a bit and then spit it out, if you don't mind. Before I go, no, but it's a very good point. And again, if I go back to when I first arrived in the city, you know, I was kind of a bit shocked that, you know, the attack brand was Merseyside. And I think very few people outside of Merseyside, probably not many people inside Merseyside, know what Merseyside is. So certainly once you get outside of Merseyside, it's not a great brand. Frankly, I think the, you know, undeniably Liverpool is a world-class brand, and I think the city region actually has moved a long way forward. You know, we've at last moved away from Merseyside. There's a increasing understanding that Liverpool is the attack brand. I'd like to see us be a bit more mature and not have to keep putting city region behind it, because frankly, it diminishes the purity and the strength of the attack brand, which is Liverpool. You're right, there's a, you know, for reasons that were probably right at the time, this regional, sub-regional architecture was set up, and, you know, whether it's in decline, whether it's static, whatever it's doing, Frank, and I'm going to try and not take a view on that. But the important thing is that what we need to do to encourage our city region partners to feel much more comfortable about Liverpool as the attack brand is, as we said in the first part of the show, better define and get everybody signed up to what is the essence of that attack brand. And I think everything that the Liverpool plan is about is, you know, Gary mentioned this before, we need a lot more resources to market the city at a time when public sector finances are in decline. We are making a call upon the private sector in return for a commercial relationship to put money, whether it's in-kind marketing support, whether it's, you know, small amounts of cash into the Liverpool plan, so that we can all, private and public sector together, create the resources that we believe we need to better set out the brand essence of Liverpool and market the city much better than we have done before. Now, I think if we can achieve that, I think our city region colleagues, you know, we're in a process at the moment of exploring with them the extent to which they feel comfortable and want to buy into this. But I think if we create the great strength in how we communicate the values of Liverpool, the strength of the Liverpool brand, it's so much easier for city region partners to buy into that and get behind it in a much more unequivocal way than I think they currently do. And I think that, you know, that onus is, I think, now upon Liverpool to step into the limelight and say, you know, this is what we're about. We've got the private sector with us. We've defined what Liverpool wants to say about it on a world stage, on a national stage. And there is a growing maturity, but we're not there yet, are we?
And that's why Mike Taylor works for Liverpool Vision and I run downtown Liverpool in business. Simon, moving the conversation on, because I think we've explored a number of things there that no doubt we'll come back to in the coming weeks, and the entrepreneurship Congress, which takes place in March next year, is a really, really exciting initiative. And congratulations to Mike and his team in winning that bid for Liverpool, because it's a fantastic success and it is going to be a superb event for us to all celebrate. And as I say, we'll come back to this subject of entrepreneurship in future shows. But I want to move on, as I say, and talk about this thing that's been tagged as Tesco Law, because if we're looking at successful marketeers, then Sir Terry Leahy and his lot at Tesco haven't done a bad job, have they? But it seems, Simon, that not just Tesco, but any of us almost, could, in the not too distant future, go out and set up our own legal firm. Is that right?
That's about the size of it, Frank. Yeah, as of 6th of October, I mean, Tesco Law is a phrase that's been used to describe a change in legislation, which means that, as I say, as of October, the old-fashioned tradition that to own a law firm you've got to be a lawyer is being thrown out the window. And from then, non-legal entities such as high street brands can buy law firms, can start their own law firms. Investors can own parts of law firms. It means that non-lawyers within legal businesses, for example, financial directors, marketing directors, can be invited to buy part of the equity of law firms. And the reason it's happening, it's been coming for about 15 years, actually, after a report which was done in the late 90s, which concluded that the legal profession was too old-fashioned, too inflexible, too inefficient, too stuffy, was not consumer-friendly, and that there was no variety in the legal marketplace. Lawyers' attitude towards these changes is very varied. It's interesting that although it's called Tesco Law, I understand that as of now, Tesco have no plans to move into the legal profession. But a number of other high street brands, who I certainly won't be plugging, they are. And as of October this year, you will see a number of supermarkets, a number of high street stores start dabbling in the law. And some of them will do more than dabble. And I think it's fantastic. I really do, because it's a time of real opportunity for innovators within the legal profession. Why do I think it's fantastic? Lawyers have had it too good for too long, and we've been found out. The reason for that is that lawyers haven't had to compete with anyone other than lawyers. And now business is moving into our profession. That will bring with it all of the values and all of the principles that other businesses have to apply. So things like you've got to be efficient, you've got to apply proper leverage, you have to brand yourself properly, you have to have a proper strategy, a proper vision, a proper business plan, you've got to be well capitalized, you've got to be more innovative in terms of the way you seek investment in your business. So we're extremely excited. We're going to grasp the opportunity at Carewins. But I have to say, a lot of my time I spend out talking to other law firms. And you do meet other people who are equally excited, but there tends to be two more usual approaches. A lot of law firms have got their head in the sand. Won't apply to us. We get our clients regardless of any of this, and so we're not worried about it. And the other side is they're terrified of it. They think, well, Tesco's, we're not going to be able to compete with them. It's curtains. It's not. But the time has come for lawyers to get with the real world, I think, and to realise that times are changing. I think it's great.
Interesting perspective. I mean, I vaguely know about this simply because you and I have had the conversation previously. And I get exactly what you say about the legal profession looking a bit stuffy and very establishment-like. I just wonder, out there in the marketplace, whether the majority of us as customers actually have the same view of, we quite like the stuffy legal professional services approach, and whether or not most people out there will actually think, oof, you know, Tesco Law or whatever, not quite for us, not quite professional enough for us. Good old stiff upper lip British won't be going to any of that nonsense. But you actually think it will open the marketplace up, do you?
Well, no, I think what you've done there is you've just defined what a fantastic opportunity this is, because I totally buy into that. I think that people will still want lawyers. But
there's nothing to stop you retaining your professional edge and being perceived as a law firm whilst being more efficient and more competitive on price and better branding yourself and looking after your staff more and being more client focused. My own view is that a lot of the brands who are coming from a retail background, who are coming from different areas of financial services, will probably make a pig's ear of it, because there are certain, or certainly in the short term they will, but that what they will be doing is they will be increasing the profile of the law. So there will become a greater legal awareness amongst businesses and consumers, and they will have more legal needs as a result of it. So we think that actually law firms who are prepared to innovate, who are prepared to think strategically, they get the best of both worlds, because they're not a supermarket. They're a law firm, but they can apply the same principles, the same values, the same plans as some of these fantastic businesses who will try and move into our profession and get our clients.
Interesting. And if you want to set up your own law firm, Gary Miller's going to give his email address out in the before the end of the programme. I want to move on quickly because we are running out of time. We've covered a lot today, but the economy generally, and this announcement this week about interest rates staying at 0.5%, most people, or most economists, I should say, are now predicting that that's likely to be the case until around November time. I was arguing last week that I don't think that's necessarily the greatest news in the world, because 0.5% to me seems to be an artificially low interest rate that any growing economy actually should be concerned about. But I guess we are where we are, which is a daft saying, but is a true one. What do you think, Gary? You think the MPC were right to keep interest rate at that level?
I'm not sure. You know, it's interesting. I've got a mortgage for one of my businesses, and I agreed a hedge fund agreement 5 years ago, which I'm stuck with. So I'm actually still paying 5.9%. So it doesn't help me whatsoever. And actually, the banks knew that was coming, and that's why they actually agreed a lot of hedges with a lot of businesses. So a lot of people are still tied up in the old regime. The 0.5%, it might help people buy properties. But if you read the newspapers locally recently about people buying properties in the city centre, 43 in 4 months, 43 properties sold in 4 months in the city isn't healthy. Sorry, city centre. That's not healthy. So people aren't spending the money the way they should. And actually, what about the savers? Because if it's down at that level, you're not getting anything in return for your investment. You're putting money into something and you're getting a minimal return from the banks. So again, it's not healthy for the saver market. I'm not sure that in the long term, I'm not an economist, so I can't argue the points of the economy, but I don't think it is actually healthy for particularly the savers, and it isn't incentivizing people to buy properties, and that's really what they wanted people to do with it. That's my view. It's not a professional view, it's just my view, my opinion. But I would say that maybe rates should go up, but they probably won't be going up until you say November. My bank manager thinks they're going to be up at 6% within about 2 years.
Oh, right.
I'm not saying which bank that is.
Get yourself on a fixed rate as soon as you can then. That's the advice this week. Well, that's it from me, Frank McKenna, and City Talk Business for another Sunday. Thanks to my guests, thanks to my producer, Jonathan Dean, and most of all, thank you for listening. Have a great week, and don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. Listen and log on to great music and great conversation on City Talk 105.9.